two very interesting lessons about Jewish history from Yaakov Avinu. I'm traveling a lot this week, so I'm recording from the car. I have a microphone, so I've been able to bring something up to the last minute. Of course, a lapel microphone, so it should come out a little bit clearer than the previous car recordings. It's raining, so I apologize for the sound of the windshield wipers in the background. Two historical lessons that it's hit highlights. One based on Yaakov's decisions, what he's conscious of. One based on a mistake he commits. One for the Tziv, and the Tziv is not wary of pointing out errors. We said so often, the ability to distinguish between moral failures and errors in judgment. And be very careful before you subject avos to accusations of sin and crime. This is very disrespectful, dishonest, I think. But they were human beings, and they can make errors in judgments. And even there, you should be very careful rather than rifling off your particular pension or particular positions. So Yaakov is afraid, and of course his fear dominates the entire first section of Vayishlach. It attracts the attention of Chazal. Yaakov is packing. Yaakov is equipped with promises, guarantees, brachos from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What is he afraid of? Katonti mikol chasadim. Chazal already sensed that the tzaddik is never fully comfortable. Perhaps the schar has been depleted. Perhaps Shem Yigvah Machet. So Yaakov provides the quintessential portrait of someone, even a righteous person, a tzaddik, who never takes his world or his promises for granted, is always fearful, always doesn't know. But the Netziv feels that Yaakov's fear, this is, again, a general thesis, it appears in several psukim, through several manifestations, several markers that are like what makes the Netziv so unique, and I'm trying to highlight these types of Netzivs on the various partials, is that it isn't an episodic or localized comment, but it infiltrates the entire section, and it appears and reappears multiple times in multiple formats. And the thesis of the Netziv was that Yaakov understands that he and his children are not in any danger because history demands their survival. Lo kol yishivta, the shvatim, there are going to be 12 tribes. Each tribe is headed by a different child. Those 12 children cannot be harmed. History has mandated his protection. But what about everyone else? What about his entourage? What about his wives? What about his servants? What about the inner? Well, those people aren't immunized or insulated by the historical prophecies and guarantees. And Yaakov is frightened about them. And his fright is expressed multiple times. First of all, he mentions the Chol Hayam, the Haftacha delivered at the Akedah to Abraham. Doesn't mention Afar Ha'aretz, doesn't mention Koch VeHashamayim. So he's aware that he's the beneficiary of Avram's brachos, which include Chol Hayam. But Chol Hayam protects the dry land, but the sand suffers losses. Doesn't fail, doesn't lose the battle with the sea, but at different stages there are casualties to the sand. And Avram isn't just worried about the eventual triumph, but how it will unfold, and will there be bloodshed, and will people of his entourage suffer? So he invokes the Chol Hayam, or he worries about Pen Yavo V'Hikani Eim Al Banim. What does it mean he'll annihilate or he'll murder women and children? It means that women will protect their children, and they won't be confident and cocky and historical guarantee. When war breaks out, they'll defend their own children, and they may become injured, damaged, possibly murdered, killed, because they've already born children. They're his wives. He cares about them. When he crosses the Ma'avar Yabok and he relocates, so he relocates his children first, and then he goes back and returns to locate. Wouldn't you think that he should first transport the inanimate objects? Because that other side of the Yabok River is closer to Esav, doesn't yet have a beachhead or a fortress, is vulnerable and susceptible to Esav's gang and Esav's men and their attack. So if I were relocating and advancing towards the enemy, I'd first pitch my tent utensils, my objects, and then last but not least, bring my children. But it doesn't fear for his children, because to a degree, Reuven and Shimon, Dan and Naphtali, they're bulletproof. Nothing will befall them. So he has the freedom, the latitude, his confidence to relocate them and position them closer to Esav's camp and then worry about the rear, the rest of his entourage, his possessions. Probably the most graphic aspect of this entire section, because keyhole into Yaakov's mind, is he keeps using this word that Hashem promised him, that Hashem never really promised him. Hashem told him in Parshas Vayetze, return to your homeland, Hashem promised him only brachos mavra. But Yaakov introduces an entirely new and novel language. He tells HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you promised me Heitiv Yitiv Imach. Well, you told me Heitiv Imach. We are HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises to Yaakov. So, the Netziv says that, first of all, Yaakov is pleading with Hashem not just for the promises of Avram, because those will include him, those will spare him and his children. But Yaakov is worried about the broader reality of a potential war and flare-up with Esav. And to a degree, Yaakov is drawing a chiluk. Yaakov is drawing a chiddush. He says, well, if all the brachos of Avram have already been delivered to me, and those brachos include protection, well, when you told me in Vayetze, that probably means not protecting you, but Ektivimach, that I will protect and provide favor and benefit for your entire camp. So Yaakov isn't just pleading with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yaakov is inferring from the sequencing of the brachos in different languages that probably I have the right to ask for Ektivimach. Point is, and this is where it's relevant for our own situation, Jewish history is guaranteed. You can bank on it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a historical process. We're at the hub of that historical process. We bear a message for humanity. Jewish people can't be obliterated. We have returned to Eretz Yisrael. This train has started to roll and move out of the station, and the itinerary, the stops on this line are clear. They're unmistakable. They can't be repressed or in any way reversed. And that should and does give us confidence in our mission, confidence to face those who threaten us, confidence to face gloomy situations, to know that whether it's 10 years or 100 years or 1,000 years, the actions we take, the steps we invest in are leading to a historical terminus, which is predetermined. But we don't really know how it will unfold. And even Chazal had multiple scripts and multiple narratives for Mashiach, some of which were more smooth and elegant and triumphant, and some of which are more rocky and challenging and even apocalyptic. So sometimes our messianic fervor leads to what we could call a messianic fever. And we become a little too giddy, we skip steps, a little too confident, we ignore potential dangers, become risk takers, and we're not the type of people that are so excited about the eventual conclusion of history that we ignore the loss of even one person's life and the hardships that could emerge and the challenges that we face. And therefore, we continue to address our world with pragmatic diplomacy, political tools, building our army, davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sometimes we could be so ecstatic messianically that we just assume it's all in the bank and we can just proceed without any care, without any precaution. And Yaakov doesn't. And that's why Yaakov's story is so resonant. That's why our Chazal, when they traveled to Rome, very different time in Jewish history, which is one of the darkest periods in Jewish history, they were able to draw inspiration from Yaakov, because despite the fact that the Jewish state of affairs was so despondent and so wretched, they realized in the broader historical sweep, the terminus of history is already predetermined. Rabbi Akiva witnessed the foxes and the rodents scampering upon the Har HaBayis, but he was able to laugh because he saw the grand design of human history, of the Jewish trajectory. So if Rabbi Akiva could temper his confidence by reading Parshas Vayishlach, we are meant to create that same tempering and moderation. The second message from Parshas Vayishlach about Jewish history is not from Yaakov's decisions, but from his mistake. The Torah has an extra phrase about Yaakov battling the Malach. I don't have the chumash in front of me, so I don't want to open the sefer while I'm driving. But the phrase, the extra phrase, I think is the sun rises be'ha'avko imo while they are wrestling. Now, we already know that they're wrestling for the previous sefer. It says at the tail end of the parsha, and the sun comes out, and then be'ha'avko imo. So the Netziv says something very intriguing. That at a certain point, when Yaakov achieved the upper hand, when it was already morning, when the angel discovered, realized he couldn't vanquish Yaakov, he's ready to step aside. He's ready to walk away. Yaakov continues the fight. Yaakov pursues the battle. That's happened to all of us. We've been dragged into a confrontation. We'd rather not engage in. We put forth our effort, whether it's physical, in most cases it's not, it's just other forms of resources, and we feel that we have victor, and sometimes we get a little too engaged, whether it's physical, young people who enjoy violence or don't have checks against violence, we're a little bit too engaged in the expression of physical force and physical violence and physical control of the other. Those who are a little bit older, aren't that intoxicated with physical brute strength, the ability to leverage other people, to control the situation, or just to perform your task and pursue your position. And sometimes you have to step out. The victory has already been achieved. And it's not that we try to rub people's noses in the sand, or we don't try to pour salt in their wounds. We just don't know when enough is enough. And Yaakov doesn't know when enough is enough, because the Malach is finished. And Yaakov continues the battle. And potentially, and I don't have the Nesim in front of me, so if you read, listen to the share and you can look it up, I'd appreciate it. Maybe I'll get a chance. I'm about to get on a plane, so I'll have a chance. But I think because in the end of the section, when Yaakov realizes that he's limping, so it's already, the sun has risen, and Ruth Soleil, he's limping. So the Nesim comments that he initially thought the pain was because of the heat of the battle, and then the limping was because of the pain, but now pain has subsided, battle had ended, and he's still limping. So I'm sure that Nesim says this is a punishment or a consequence of his pursuing a fight that had already ended. It takes two to tango. Malach's finished dancing. But I think, I'm not sure that Nesim says that this actually happens in that final round of the fight, which could have been avoided, which was redundant. So the redundant phrase by Avkoimo describes Yaakov pursuing a battle, and it's almost a stylistic irony, because the whole last round is redundant, and I'm not sure if actually the hip displacement happens during that final redundant round. And then it says something very interesting, because this is an important historical message about Jews always facing enemies, and of course, Kodesh Baruch Hu Matzilenu Miyadam, but sometimes you have to back down or back away after partial victory, after temporary victory, without assuming that we're going to persist and aggressively stick to it until ultimate clinching victory. Well, sometimes they're very elusive. And then Netziv says that what made this so unfortunate was that Yaakov's whole trade had been Oev Shalom Baro Dev Shalom. At least this is a peacemaker, Yaakov the peacemaker. That's another parsha. So Yishlach, the peacemaker with Levon, the peacemaker with Shem, the peacemaker amongst the brothers. So, and Netziv actually says that when you've achieved a Midah Tova, a proper trade. And remember, the word Midos today are a little bit overused, so they lose some of their particularized meaning. Midah Tova doesn't mean a mitzvah or a chesed, just a good trait. Part of being an Oved Hashem is working on your traits as a human being. So Yaakov had developed that trait of conciliatory, conciliation, rapprochement, and he of all people should have been able to walk away from that violence and aggression angel, this mysterious persona, walk away from the battle. And he's punished for it, not only because of historical inadvisability for the Jewish people, but the moral inadvisability of knowing how not just to walk away from the fight, but in general, not to break your good habits, even temporarily. He quotes Sir Rishon the Ryan of the Dharma, Rivan and Makos, that good habits have the status of a nether, and if you violate those habits, it's almost as if you're violating a nether. Very interesting to see it, as always.